This is Now We're Here and It Turns to Chaos, a supernatural fanfic by Vida and Giroux, read by Vida and Giroux. And that will be the extent of me butchering French pronunciation. This story is set in the 5.04 The End universe, although it's somewhat of an alternate since Zachariah still hasn't come to collect Dean to return him to the past, and future Dean and future Cass are still alive. This is what happens after the ocean evaporated, after time kept ticking away but stopped passing, after life turned into quantum theory and no one was left to protest human experimentation. It's an absurdist play that suddenly makes sense. That's obviously a sign of the apocalypse, because no matter how long they kept on waiting, Godot was never going to care enough to show up. It's Scrabble letters that spell out the same thing no matter how many ways you rearrange them. Dean's been to hell, so he knows this isn't it, but it's still pretty creative. Newton said that action led to opposite and equal reaction. If that's true, he doesn't even want to think about what he and Sam must have done in what's currently the past, but what is still also his future. The iron laws of physics, they're breaking the threads of his hope like they're disproving string theories. If this is the future, but he doesn't remember the recent past, does that mean that it's still malleable? Or is it one point with a million strings leading out from it like a supernova? A single dot that's the endpoint to every graphed equation, regardless of variables. Dean's still not sure what he is, but he knows that Sam and his agreement are constants. Zachariah was supposed to come and collect him in 3 days' time. Dean was supposed to shove the lesson down his throat and keep it down until he could get back. He wasn't supposed to swallow it. Who knew that even his cynicism could still be taken to an exponent, that everything was on a logarithmic scale? 3 days, Zachariah had said. That must have been exponential, too. Dean's not actually sure how long it's been. A few weeks, he supposes. But it's all irrelevant now. The moment only mattered if someone was there to call out time of death for you, to take responsibility for your body, to grieve. Dean's watched himself mercy killing, wonders what will happen when he drops the adjective and just starts killing for the hell of it. They already had his brother. It would make sense that sooner or later they'd come lobbying for him too. Collectors were never satisfied with just one. They always had to have the paired set. When he'd first arrived here, he'd asked himself what the future was like. His future self had thrown his hands out carelessly, and a sardonic snarl had curled his lip. The future, he'd repeated, like it was the worst thing he could think of. This isn't the future, kid. It's the end. And he's seen it now. He's seen Lucifer wearing his brother's meat suit like it's the latest Betsy Johnson. He'd come into that clearing right as Lucifer was about to snap his neck. Dean's not entirely keen on his future self, but still. When someone was trying to kill you, it got a little personal. So what if you'd ruined the white suit? So what if the cult didn't work on the double? So what if Sam had said yes, would say yes, and always will say yes? This is a major problem with time travel. You get into it thinking that it's linear, a straight shot. Then you find out that it's a closed loop. He's not sure how Cass survived the Blitz, but he's still here too. Along with his future self. Whether the apocalypse happens or not, they're going to be paying back the repercussions with their blood for a long time to come. It takes a while for him to let it really sink in, and when he does, it's like he's inhaled it. It's hit its bloodstream all at once, and even if he wanted to stop it, he couldn't. His future self told him to say yes. He hasn't brought it up since right before they went on that ill-fated mission to kill the devil, but it's almost worse now that it's implied. He can see it in his own eyes. He's just watching him, waiting for the critical mass, waiting until it decays enough that he's willing to do it. The problem with saying yes, Dean thinks, is that it's like a watermelon. You couldn't tell from the outside whether it was good or bad. You had to cut it open first. But by then, you'd already bought and paid for it. It was yours, and you couldn't take it back. Starts out with a ghost and a cut on his arm. Simple. Salt and burn, cauterizing bandage. Good enough. Dean's not careless enough anymore to say that something's good is new. But nothing's ever been simple. And now, chaos theory isn't even a theory anymore. It's a fact of life. Dean's got his own little cabin now. It's next to the one his future self occupies, he'd insisted. Dean hadn't wanted to. since after all, he was going back to his own time any second now. Since they're weeks on now, this is a point that his future self can't seem to let go of. He's always asking Dean, was he sure he needed this meal or that toothbrush? Since after all, he was going back any second now. So wouldn't it be better appropriated to someone else? Someone whose timeline had fixed endpoints? The signs are classic, but his future self doesn't want to get involved. Dean explains about the apparition that's been materializing at night, leaning over his bed. The messages dripping blood that fade slowly from the walls. His future self isn't really listening. They're making their way back from a convoy mission to get supplies. He needs some salt, Dean tells him. I can take care of it. I haven't seen a spirit in years, says his older self. You can't see anything if you don't look, Dean says, and his future self grimaces. The conversation's over. Dean cuts himself on a piece of rusty metal during the mission, but it's not something he gives much thought to. He ties up his arm with a strip torn from his shirt and calls it good enough. Later, he supposes that he just forgot to take proper care of it. Either that, or maybe his death wish is still alive and kicking. He's telling Cass about it at dinner one night, about how he thinks the spirit is someone from here, from this camp. The apparition's dressed in hunting clothes, and even now Dean can feel its ice-cold fingers wrapped around his wrist, looking for the veins that it'll ride like an interstate to his heart. Bon Jovi had always said that hearts were like open highways. It seems to have something personal for me, Dean's telling Cass. Like maybe it thinks that I'm him. You are him, Cass says. Or you will be. Dean's so adamant that he's shivering. Cass is unwinding his makeshift bandage. Dean's heart is set up shop in his trachea again. The red streaks fanning out from his cut remind Dean of a blood-red sunset, or maybe a sunrise, depending on how you look at it. You could pour some salt on it, Dean suggests darkly. His future self is pacing around in circles. He thinks that Dean's being careless, but Dean maintains that he's just following his fearless leader's example. How Chuck was elected the one to look at his arm, Dean's not sure, though he's suspecting the loss of some bet. Did you see this? Dean asks Chuck. Did you write about it? Chuck just looks at him and sighs, says that either he's not a prophet anymore, or everyone is. For option three, Dean says, I die and you don't want to tell me. Chuck's got his knuckles pressed to his burning forehead now. I think we both know that would be something you'd want, Chuck says. Both of you, I mean. He jerks his head over at Dean's future self, keeps walking around and picking up his rifle and then putting it back down. Dean remembers it suddenly. Listen, Chuck, he says. I need you to do something for me. Chuck's wary, but he finally agrees. Dean's future persona just shakes his head at him and mutters that he can't believe him. It's okay, Dean reassures him. The feeling's mutual. Chuck's thorough. Dean will give him that. He brings Dean what he asked for the next morning. Are you sure? He asks Dean beforehand. No, Dean says. Certainty's not something I like to buy on the black market. He was right, though. The apparition Dean's been seeing is the guy that Chuck says his future self had an argument with a few months ago. Apparently there was a disagreement over some girl. Too bad your last name's not Woolery, Dean laughs. Anyway, Chuck continues, the same guy ended up getting shot after a mission. You, Chuck inclines his head at the door, said that he'd been infected. Awesome, Dean says. There aren't any antibiotics. His future self tells him this gruffly while throwing him a look that Dean recognizes like he's seeing it through the backside of a cracked mirror. It's the same one he gives to things he feels sorry for, right before he blows out their brains. Dean wonders how the hell his future self is the leader of a place like this, when he doesn't even have any antibiotics. Cass is a walking pharmacy, so Dean knows that it's not like they don't exist anymore. We ran out, is all his future self has to say. We're better off without them. Dean never took the Hippocratic Oath, now or in the future, but he still can't agree with this. This is it. His future self is tired of this topic. This is it, he repeats. There was everything before this, and once we're gone, there'll be nothing. And all because I couldn't bring myself to say one little word. So yeah, if I was lucky enough to be you and I was dying, I'd just let it happen. Dean doesn't think that anyone else would find it funny that his future self is him, meaning that his argument doesn't really make sense. So he keeps that to himself. The world is coming down. It just isn't falling fast enough. Of all the questions he's asked his future self, it may just be the most ridiculous. But he's pushing delirium with this fever, so he figures it's okay. Do you still hope? He asks. Hope, scoffs his future self. Hope. Well, Dean asks, why else are you here? Even with 5 years to think about it, he doesn't have an adequate response. Watching himself, Dean notices a pained expression that never really fades from his face. He knows himself too well to let it slide by, no matter how many people are standing on third base. This version of himself has not and never will get over Sam. This version thinks that he should have let Sam die back in South Dakota, that he should have taken that Reaper's hand and gone merrily along, that he should have just done it while his hands were still steady, while he still had his heart so he could pierce right through it. Chuck says that it's common practice here to burn all bodies, so they're stumped until Chuck decides to go and talk to the girl in question. While he's gone, Dean thinks about Sam, his tone when he said that it didn't have to be like this, that they could still fight it. Mostly, he thinks about how it's not their fault. They were just part of an experiment, two unknowns that someone set on fire just to see what would happen. Could they be blamed that they didn't sublimate, that their reaction was far stronger than hypothesized? It's done, Chuck's saying in his ear, and Dean wakes up like he's aspirating flames. I talked to the girl, he continues, and I took care of it. He's sounding evasive. Dean asks him why. Well, says Chuck, I don't know why she was keeping a used condom, but I guess there was enough DNA in it to keep that guy's spirit here. You're lying, Dean says. Chuck's looking at the ceiling. Trust me, he says. I'm a writer, and even I couldn't make this stuff up. If Sam were here, in another lifetime maybe, or even an alternate universe, he and Dean would have laughed over this for weeks. As is, Dean can't seem to find the energy to do much more than muster a milquetoast smile and tell Chuck thanks, and that he'd almost but not quite forgiven him for the Lederhosen incident. Dean's not sure why, but somehow his arm is burning while the rest of him remains encased in ice. It makes sense, though. They always were old-fashioned about time down there, measuring it out with pocket protractors and always double-checking their answers. Dean supposes that Alistair's had enough of it to prepare something truly special. He always did make a science of it. Man, his future self is saying, and it pulls Dean back into realism. He thinks he prefers the Renaissance. At least when they painted hell, they didn't get it right. Man, he's repeating, you can't die because what will happen to me? Dean almost laughs at that. So this is how it would be, him in the future, carving out every part of himself that had ever belonged to Sam until there was nothing left but self-preservation. There's a weird sort of smile twisting his face now. You're not me, but I'm you, is what his future self is telling him. Maybe if you die, all of this will just disappear. I knew it. Dean manages a smirk in a smug tone. Knew what? His older self is spitting before tipping back some more whiskey. Hope, Dean says. You have hope. He's getting worse. His future self mutters darkly in the background, but Chuck reassures him that the spirit is gone. Dean can't be sure. There are shadows everywhere, no matter how bright out it is. He tries to remind himself that vultures are merely swans with black wings, but he knows that the distinction won't really matter when they're tearing his flesh. He's pretty sure they've already started, to tell the truth. During a more lucid period where he's shivering so hard he thinks if he does manage to crack a rib, he'll use it as a self-inflicted stake, Cass comes to visit. Here, Cass says, I brought you something. Dean's expecting an easy way out, but even Cass isn't that kind. Instead, something small and cold materializes in his palm. I kept it, Cass explains, even though it turned out not to matter. Dean's not sure if he should take it. This may not be his time, but even so, he's not naive enough to think that gifts come without price tags. His hands are shaking. Cass curls his fingers around the amulet for him. It's nostalgic, Cass observes. Dean can think of 1,000 other adjectives to describe it, but currently, he's too tired, and the string of the amulet's already tangled around his fingers. The thing about radioactive decay is that it's a chain of instability. Every so often, you might get a positron emission, you might crack a smile, but in general, it just kept on turning into something new, something less, but it still never quite reached zero. It was the sum of all your worst moments as your desire to die approached infinity, the chance that you actually would snuck up on Zero but never ambushed it correctly. It was the paradox of splitting a hair in half 1,000 times. When Zachariah finally comes for him, Dean thinks he's died. He's not that lucky. He should know that by now. If this were a library, Zachariah would be paying off his fines until Dante finished writing him a new closed loop in the basement section. Apparently, Zachariah had never learned that when you borrowed something, you're supposed to return it in a timely fashion, and in the same condition it was when you got it. In some ways, being back in this timeline is harder. No matter how confining a circle was, at least you knew you couldn't escape it. Right now, they still can't tell what it is, whether the road forks up ahead, and if it does, which way will they choose? Equations were harder to solve the more variables you stuck in. Sam comes and Dean calls him. Cass had said that he would do the calling, if Dean wanted, but Dean didn't let him. It was a family thing, and although Cass's family is such a bunch of douches, Dean would adopt Cass if he could. This was just something that he had to do himself. He's still ridiculously pale, and he's not sure how he's going to pay for the rest of the antibiotics, much less the hospital bills. But it's okay. He's going to have a pretty badass scar. Cass had agreed that it was bad, though he had also pointed out that the scar was on his arm, and nowhere near his ass. And Sam's back. That's the main point. Did you decide yet? Sam asks him. No, Dean says. I'm waiting. The amulet's clutched in his fist, and they're in that Hotel California wasteland, where it could be heaven or hell or something else altogether. If I'm going to die, Dean continues, I can always do it tomorrow.